Hello and welcome to Focus on Business, where we build sustainable communities through sustainable business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's program, the third in our series on getting out of the cubicle and into business, or in other words, how to start your own business and grow it successfully. This third installment, we're going to be talking about banking and what our options are for funding our business through loans, lines of credit, and other lending mechanisms. And we're going to be learning about the things we need to know about banking relationships, loan terms and conditions, personal guarantees, and so much more. And we're fortunate to have in the studio today John Roten of Harrington Bank. Harrington Bank is your local community bank. And they have three locations in the Chapel Hill and Carrboro area on MLK Junior Boulevard in Southern Village and also at Farrington at NC54. And I'm going to give John an opportunity a bit later to tell us more about Harrington Bank and about community banking in general, because I don't think a lot of us understand community banking. But right now, I'm going to give you John's background. John has been with Harrington Bank for 11 years, and when John first joined Harrington Bank, he was a commercial loan officer, the person you were always going in to see if you needed money for your business. John worked with small businesses to provide them with financing for equipment or other business needs, working capital lines of credit, purchase or refinance of commercial real estate, and other banking services. Now, since 2008, John has managed the credit risk department of the bank, which has included workouts with customers in financial distress, assisting with the sale of bank-owned property, and determining the bank's likelihood of loss on certain lending relationships, and in general, reporting on the health and condition of the bank's loan portfolio. And something you should know about John is that he has both colors of blue in his educational background. He has an MBA from Kenan Flagler and a Bachelor of Science from Duke, so I think he has this area covered. John resides in Durham with his wife and three children. He loves the outdoors and tries to get outside with his kids as much as he can. And he is currently on the board of two local nonprofits and also volunteers as much as he can with his oldest son at the local Ronald McDonald House. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lee. Happy to be here.
Now, several years ago, you and I wrote a couple of articles about the business lending relationship, and we're going to revisit those articles today. And those articles are available on the LeeStrickland.com website under the Focus on Business radio show page. And in those articles, we talked about banking and lending, and we defined a lot of terms for the businesses and the relationships. And I think that's where I want to start today, too, is kind of giving a background on banking and what it takes, what it's like, and what people need to know about it. So let's get the first question out, and that is it wise for us to deal with only one bank at a time, or should we spread our banking business relationship over multiple banks?
Right. I think depends on each business's kind of unique circumstances. I think in general, one bank is sufficient for most small businesses. As you get to be larger, have more needs, then it may make some more sense to diversify across and start to move to a larger bank that's in the area. But in general, I think for most businesses here locally, that getting to know one bank, getting to know your banker very well is going to serve you the best in the long run.
So in the long run, how does that banking relationship that you've established, hopefully early on in your business, impact what a bank is able to offer to you or how they evaluate your loans and those kind of things?
Well, certainly the more the banker that you've been working with knows you and knows your business and understands your financial statements, it's going to be easier for them not only to give you advice about what type of loan may be the best fit for you, but also just in general for your business. They can also serve as a little bit of a business consultant as well, looking at your financials, letting you know what they see in the numbers, the trends they're seeing, and maybe raise some issues that both of you can work together on to improve both the banking relationship and your business.
So that kind of goes back to one of our earlier shows in the series, and when we were talking about the resources that businesses need to get in place. And we need to think of our banker, our friendly neighborhood banker, as part of that resource team and keeping us on track and being able to bring an expertise to our business that we may not have initially in starting our businesses.
Yes, absolutely. And that's really important from the standpoint that the banker never likes to be surprised. And so it's better to be upfront with anything that's going on in your business rather than have the banker find out about it later. And that's when it's too late a lot of times.
Right. So talk to your banker early and often if you're having an issue of any kind, or you foresee a cash flow need, something of that, so that the relationship is there and an understanding of your business is there before you have that actual need.
Right.
Right. Now, if a business expects to, you know, they're just starting up and they think they're going to need money in 6 to 12 months, what process should they start? Say they've been in, they've talked to you about opening their bank accounts, those kind of things. But what do they need to be thinking about in that period leading up to that 6 to 12 months about getting in place so that they can share information with you and be prepared?
Right. Having good financials that you can present to the bank is really the most important thing. Most banks are going to want to see 2 to 3 years of tax returns, both for the business and for the individuals that are behind the business personally. If the business hasn't been around, then obviously those tax returns won't be there. But whatever most recent financial statements that are available would be the most helpful for the bank to look at. If there's internally prepared statements as well, most businesses use QuickBooks these days or some other financial accounting software. Statements that are printed off, your profit and loss statement and balance sheet for the year-to-date period is very helpful for the banker to look at.
Okay. So does it make a difference to you whether they're keeping the books on a cash basis or an accrual basis? Meaning, for cash basis, for those of you who don't know, means when you get a bill, you pay it, and that's when you recognize it. Or for accrual basis, we get a bill, we put it in the books, and that's when we recognize that we have that liability to the company. Does that make a difference in how you look at their financial statements?
For a smaller business, it usually doesn't make too big of a difference. Where it can start to impact is if a company has a lot of receivables. So they've made sales to customers. Those customers haven't paid them yet, and so they're waiting on that money to come in. And if that number starts to get to be very large, it's important for the banker to understand that, where it may not reflect on the cash basis because you haven't received that money yet.
Right. Okay. So when we're looking at how we set up our QuickBooks and we're looking at information we're going to provide to the banker, we're going to have to be clear about whether that's something that's on the books as money that's received and available to pay on a loan, or if it's outstanding and how long it's been outstanding, how good that receivable is as far as the bank's concerned.
Exactly. That's really what the bank is going to be looking at, is that cash flow of the business to understand if the banker believes that the business can pay the loan back that they're looking for.
Okay, so let's kind of define some terms right now that people may or may not be familiar with. We all think we know what a loan is, but let's define what a loan is.
A loan is simply the money that the bank provides to the business and expects the business to pay back, and not only pay back what they borrowed, but pay it back with interest. And so the interest is the money that the bank earns. Obviously, there's costs the bank has for lending the money out, the loan officer's time for working with the customer, the other staff time at the bank, just like any business, all the back office support that goes into running the business. And so the way the bank makes money is to charge a not only a fee when they provide the loan, but the interest rate on the loan, and that helps to keep the bank in business.
Okay, so what's the difference between a line of credit and a loan?
So just a term loan is all the money is advanced at the close of the loan. So if you needed to borrow $50,000, the bank would give you $50,000 when you signed the loan paperwork. And then you would start to pay that back immediately over time. For a line of credit, that's almost like a credit card. And so there's availability, and you can draw up, pay it back, and then advance again. So there's multiple advances that are available on the line of credit up to the amount of the line.
And how long can a line of credit stay outstanding?
Typically, they're for 1 year. That's the kind of the standard across the industry for a line of credit. And because it can be readvanced, banks like to reassess the financial situation each year on a company and look and really see how things are going.
So let's say I have a line of credit and I had intended to use it just for emergencies, but I start finding myself using it for more than emergencies, and it's usually meeting my payroll. Is that a conversation I need to have with you early and often? One of those things you don't want to be surprised about when it, you know, the annual review comes around?
Absolutely. And that's another definition the bank will start to use in that case, is it becomes permanent working capital on the line. And so if the bank starts to see that, and we'll use the example again of the $50,000 line of credit. If there's always $20,000 that's on that line that never gets paid back, the banker will start to look at that and say, that's permanent working capital. You're not using it as a line anymore where it's being drawn up and paid down. And that's where they may look at terming that out, just taking that portion and say, okay, we're going to take this and let you pay it back over a period of time. That way we make sure we get it paid down.
Okay. So next thing I want to talk about is an unsecured loan. What are those and how available are they truly for businesses that are just getting started up?
They are not frequently done by banks for small businesses, an unsecured loan. So what an unsecured loan is there is no collateral for the loan. Collateral is what the bank will take to help secure the loan if the primary source of repayment, which is the cash flow from the business, isn't there. An example would be equipment. So if the business were buying equipment, the bank is going to take a lien on that equipment. If the business can't pay it back, then the bank can sell that equipment to get the loan paid back.
Okay, so the bank would hold the title for that equipment while the loan's outstanding?
Correct.
Okay.
And then an unsecured loan would not have that. And so that would be if the loan wasn't paid back, the bank has no other way to get the money other than from the cash flow of the business.
Right.
And that's why banks typically are reticent to do an unsecured loan.
Especially in this economy.
Correct.
Right. And that's where it gets into your day job about the risk management of the portfolio there at Harrington Bank.
That's right.
Okay. So in, just to find collateral for us too. So let's talk about working capital because a little bit we were talking about using a working capital line and a permanent working capital. So what is working capital?
Right. So as we were, example we used earlier for the receivables. So if you've made a sale to a customer and they're not paying you for 60 days, you need available, you want that cash to be used today to keep running your business until that money comes in. You can use that working capital line of credit to advance based on what that customer owes you. Then when they pay you, then that money comes in and pays the line back for that need.
Okay. So two more terms, personal guarantee, which I think every business needs to understand this one in particular. So everybody listen up because this is a critical one and you need to understand that most loans are going to require a personal guarantee. So explain to us, John, what a personal guarantee is.
A personal guarantee is the bank is going to require all the owners of the business to sign a guarantee. And that means that that person or persons are personally responsible for paying back that loan in the event that the business cannot pay it back or the business goes out of business and isn't there anymore. And so that personal guarantee is very important to the bank. It shows A, that you're willing to stand behind the loan and your company, but it also gives the bank additional comfort that there's a third source of repayment other than the cash flow from the business and the collateral that the bank has taken for the loan.
Now, in my experience, personal guarantees are just part of doing business when you own a business. Until you get to a very large size, you're going to be expected to personally guarantee loans and lines of credit, correct?
That's correct. The only time really when it doesn't is when the business gets so large there's multiple shareholders or it's a public company, and again the person, there's really not one person that's behind the company, and so that's in those cases the personal guarantees aren't there. But for most small businesses, a personal guarantee is required by most banks.
So that raises a question: if we're a small business but yet we have five people who own it, and let's say we own it, you know, everybody has 20%, does everyone have to guarantee it? All five have to sign the personal guarantee. And is it proportional? The 20% is all they're guaranteeing, or are they guaranteeing 100%?
Right. If all five own 20%, then typically all five would be required to personally guarantee the loan. Once it drops below that 20% ownership threshold, that's when the banks have a little leeway and don't have to necessarily require the personal guarantee. Then as far as the amount of money that each personal guarantor is responsible for, it's typically a term that's called drawing a blank on the name.
It's okay. Give us the definition and you can come back for the
That's
term.
Right.
We do that all the time.
but joint and several would be the term. And so every guarantor is responsible for the entire amount of the loan. There can be a limited guarantee, in which case each guarantor could, instead of being responsible for the entire amount, but a limited portion of the debt. That's less common. And even if that were used, it would still be more than the 20% ownership. The bank would want all those guarantees to add up to more than 100%,
right,
to make sure that there was extra coverage there.
Well, isn't it likely when you do a personal guarantee, and let's say, again, we have the same five people, one person may have more ready cash available at the times if a default would happen, and the others might be completely tapped out. So the bank would come to the one person that had the pockets to pay it, right?
That's why the bank shies away from the limited guarantee just for that reason.
Okay. So let's talk about how we get set up and what we need to think about in planning how much money we want to borrow, and how we start putting our plan together. Do we have to come to you with a business plan, with a cash flow projection? What kind of things should we be preparing to bring into you, the banker, to ask for money?
Projections are always helpful and appreciated by the banker, but in most cases, I would say it's rare that we actually see those from small businesses. And understandably so, most small businesses are out there trying to survive day to day, and to do that advanced planning and think forward through the next year can be difficult to find the time. But it is a good step, and if you have that, the banker is not going to be even so concerned about what the numbers are saying, but more so the assumptions that you've made in those projections to understand your thought process, what you think your business is doing. And the banker will look at the numbers and get his assessment of whether he agrees or not with your assumptions. And if not, we'll ask you questions about those to really dig into what the numbers are showing.
Okay, well, it's time for our first break. You're going to be listening to Brad Paisley's Easy Money. I kind of thought that was appropriate for the topic. And we'll be right back.
Sun all day. Now I work 2 hours a night. It feels a lot more like play. Before Kenny joined the band, he used to hang drywall. Ben worked down at Valentino's. So when you see us up here and think, man, they're lucky, you don't have to tell us, cause we know. Yeah, we're laughing all the way to the bank, cause it all said, boy, you're going nowhere fast. You ought to get a real job. Why don't you quit that band? Now she can kiss my backstage pass. Yeah, cause we're laughing all the way to the bank. Cause it all just seems so funny. Bunch of guys like us in a big tour bus making that.
That was Brad Paisley's Easy Money. So you're listening to Focus on Business, and I'm your host, Lee Strickland. And we're still talking banking and borrowing with John Roten of Harrington Bank, your community bank. Now, John, before we get back into things, I'd like to talk about Harrington Bank. So give us some background and explain to us what a community bank is.
Sure. A community bank is a locally owned and operated bank, and that's very true of Harrington. All our locations are right here in the Chapel Hill area, and we are locally owned. Our headquarters is at the Farrington Road and 54 location. And so when you come in to talk to somebody, all your decisions are made right here. They don't have to go anywhere else, which makes a big difference as far as understanding the needs of the community and your business in particular, as well as the responsiveness and quickness with which we can get back to you on your loan need or any other banking need.
So are there any special rules that community banks have to obey that are different from the bigger banks?
Well, they have to lend locally, and that's what they're all about. So we're not going to typically do loans that are going to be in other areas of the state or in other states at all. All the money is going to be put right back here to use in the community.
Primarily here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro,
exactly.
Durham, that kind of area here in the Triangle. So what's the advantage for someone in being a small business coming to a community bank versus, you know, a huge bank? And I won't name them, but we all know who they are.
Right. We like to think that, again, we're gonna know who you are when you come in, which is very important, especially if you're borrowing money. You want your banker to know who you are when you call in. You don't want to talk to somebody different every time that has no idea who your business is or what your business does. And while, again, that's not true across the board, a lot of times at the larger banks, it can happen as you start to call an 800 number, or again, decisions aren't being made. They're being made somewhere else, and they don't know what's going on in the area here. And so what's happening in other parts of the country could impact the decision they make about your business here, and it could be a much different situation.
Okay, so I always advise my clients to find a local community bank to make that connection with early, especially when you're a small business starting out. As you get larger, yes, there's going to be different things that a larger bank can do for you. But having that personal connection gives you such a comfort level that when you do walk in, you know there's going to be someone, or when you do call. And I think that's really important for businesses that are starting up, because it's challenging enough without not being able to go in and establish a relationship and get that feeling that you can ask the questions and get the answers, and that there is a motivation to make your business succeed because it is here in the community and part of what's going on in the community. So now we kind of know what Harrington Bank is. What's the situation here in the community right now for lending for community banks? Are you sitting on money that's out there, you know, for us to come and start our business and come knock on your door and start early and often asking what we need to do and how to establish that relationship?
Yes. So we are actively looking for new business opportunities to lend money. And we are very happy to work with small businesses, as we've talked about, for those term loans or lines of credit that they may need, as well as if they might be looking to buy a building for their own use that they're where they currently operate.
Okay. We like can that's finance. Called owner-occupied.
Owner-occupied,
right?
Correct. Okay. We are not really doing speculative lending right now. So working with a few years ago, the big push was all the builders that were just building homes that didn't have buyers necessarily right. lined up. And that's part of what a lot of banks got into trouble with that type of lending. And so we've, as with all the other banks, have shied away from that recently, okay. although I think some of the larger banks are getting back into it. But for us, we're going to be really focused on those businesses where, again, it's a sound business that's it can be a startup or have been an operation for a few years, but based here locally that has a business model that we can understand. So again, we're not going to be into technology or things like that. There's other lenders that are more focused on that.
Okay, so let's talk about, I'm coming into you, I'm a new business, and I'm a first-time loan applicant. I've never borrowed money personally or for my business. And what kind of mistakes do you typically see from someone like me coming in brand new?
Right. I think the biggest thing is that they've already used up all of their personal resources before they come into the bank, and that presents the biggest challenge to the banker. We like to see you come in beforehand and let us work on the right plan for that. Once you've borrowed up your credit cards and you've tapped any other equity that you have in your house or anything else. It gives very little for the bank to be able to do anything to help you further. And that's because it's a bigger risk to the bank. There's nothing there for the bank to rely on, as we talked about earlier.
Right.
Those secondary and tertiary sources of repayment besides the business. And if the bank can't get that comfort, it makes it very hard. So that's the biggest thing, that mistake that we see with people come in. They've just waited too long to come talk to their banker.
Okay, so is it a good idea that when they come in and they open the bank account, they get their checking account and say, or their credit card or whatever for their bank, that at that point they start talking to you about how the loan process works and, you know, what they need to time things? Should they start trying to lay ground for a line of credit at that point, or what?
Yes, it definitely makes sense to go on and establish a relationship with a lender at the bank. That's how they get to start to know your business. And even though it may not be a fit for a loan today, they can start to talk to you about some things that you can put into place and what they'd need to see or like to see, so that maybe in 6 months to a year, everything is there, and then it becomes very easy to get a loan in place for you.
And let's say, you said the biggest mistake they make is waiting too long. So at what point, when they start to tap into some of the equity on their home, or they're starting to max out the credit cards, what's that too late point actually look like?
Right. I think it's unique to each situation, so it's hard to say what it might be in any individual circumstance. But generally, if you've used up all of the resources and now you're coming to the bank and you say, I don't have any more room to borrow my credit card, I don't have any more room to borrow against my house, can you do something for me? The bank's probably going to say, no, we really can't do anything at that point. So you want to come in earlier, probably at the point you're thinking that you may need to tap into any equity you have in your house, and talk to your bank at that point, and they can help structure maybe to help you tap that equity in a more efficient way.
Okay, and so make wiser decisions at the point that you're already starting to have to supplement the business from personal resources.
Right.
What is the single biggest risk factor that an applicant can reduce prior to making that loan application? Is it dealing with their credit history? What are those things that they need to look at?
A clean credit history is probably the most important thing. If the bank pulls your credit, and this is for, as we talked about, every loan is going to be personally guaranteed. And
right.
So we're going to pull credit on all the guarantors and see their credit history. And if there's late payments, or we see a lot of debt on there that it looks like that they'd have trouble individually affording on what they're earning, then that's going to be a big risk factor to the bank in looking at that loan request. And so paying bills on time and making sure that you keep your debts at a reasonable level that you can afford to pay back yourself is going to be important.
So if we're looking at the credit history of our five fictional people owning this company that we were talking about earlier, and they're each owning 20%, what if only two of them have good credit histories? How does that impact the decision to lend?
If two are strong, have good credit history, have good personal financial strength overall, so they have liquidity in the form of a lot of cash or investments that they have, or they have other assets that are available to the bank, and so that overall financial position of them is strong enough, then just having two of the five is acceptable, even if the other three don't have good credit scores. But the worst case would be nobody has good credit scores and or the financial strength.
So what if, let's just say, everyone lives in an apartment, they're driving old cars, they don't have cash in the bank, and they start a business. Is there any opportunity for them to get a loan or a line of credit under that kind of scenario?
That's going to be a difficult situation for them to qualify for a loan from a bank in the current environment right now. And probably the best way at that point is to look to other sources. So we've talked about credit card debt. So if they haven't opened a credit card for the business, that's a way to get started, as well as talking to friends and family. And that's typically what your banker will tell you, is this is a situation that requires equity be put into the company. And what they mean is that's personal money that they would like to see the owners or the owner's friends and family put into the business to fund the business that way. That's somewhat less risky money than the bank's money.
So what if our friends and family don't have money that's liquid, say they have investments and things? Can they simply act as the guarantor for the line of credit or the loan?
Well, that's the bank could tell the owners of the business that have come in to apply for a loan that they would have to bring in additional guarantors in order to qualify for the loan. So the bank won't say who to bring in. They can't name certain people, but they could just say that we require, and then the person applying for the loan could bring in somebody else to see if that person would qualify as a guarantor.
Okay. So that's an option if our friends and family don't have liquid assets either, but they have good credit rating and they have the ability to borrow.
That's correct.
So let's say we know we've been banking with you for a number of years, and let's say we have gotten a big order from a new client, and we have to ramp up our production and our inventory and all this buying ahead of that order. Is it sufficient for us to have a purchase order signed and executed with that potential client for you to lend against those future revenues? Or is that, do you really need to see the money coming in the bank and everything happening before?
If there's already been an established lending relationship and the bank knows you, then we can rely on that purchase order, understanding your business and the need and what this means for your business. And so that's where that relationship helps, is the banker already understands how your business works. They don't have to get up to speed as to why this purchase order is unusual and why you need to borrow against it.
Okay, so it's time for another break. And when we come back, we'll finish this conversation with John Roten. And right now, I want to tell you about a couple of our underwriters. IWP Photography and Video captures the important moments of our lives, specializing in events and weddings and more. They do wonderful live art paintings. And for more information, visit IWP Photography's website at www.iwpphotography.com. And our second underwriter on our show, which we are grateful to also, is Focus Resources, who gives you practical advice on how to start, fund, grow, and run your business successfully. Focus Resources also specializes in government grants and contracts. For more information, visit them at www.focusresourcesinc.com. And we'll be right back.
The Ronald McDonald House of Durham is holding its fundraising breakfast on October 22nd at 7:30 a.m. at the Cotton Room in Durham. For more information, please visit www.ronaldhousedurham.org. Again, www.ronaldhousedurham.org, or call 919-286-9305. Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina is hosting its Wine for Wishes event on October 3rd from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. For more information, contact Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina at 919-821-7111, extension 201. That's 919-821-7111, extension 201. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. And in the studio with us today is John Roten of Harrington Bank, your community banking resource. And we've been having a conversation about new businesses or small businesses going to the bank to get the resources and establish a relationship for being able to borrow to finance the growth of our business or to get us through those bumpy times when we're just trying to smooth out our revenues and get the customers coming in reliably. So John, right now I'd kind of like to talk about someone who comes in off the street, they don't have a relationship with you, and they're really not in that great a shape. What kind of things do they need to put together to come back to you after getting turned down to make sure that they're in a better shape the next time they come in?
Right. So if they've talked to a lender at a bank and provided some financial information and been turned down, the banker has to give a reason for why the loan was denied. And if you're working with community bank, then they're typically going to go into some detail and talk with you about what they saw in the numbers and what you could work on in order to be able to qualify for a loan. And so they'll give you a plan and say, well, if you get revenues to a certain level or profitability for a certain period of time, maybe for 6 months, we're showing profitability and some stable revenue. These are just examples of things that you could do in order to get the business in a better shape that it could qualify for a loan.
And again, we get back to the personal guarantees. So we'd also want to be cleaning up our credit history in that time frame too.
Yes, if that was the issue, if the personal credit was one of the reasons for being turned down, then working on that, trying to focus on getting credit card debt paid down or paid off, and getting any other debts that you have taken off or cleaned up, then that would help the overall situation.
So we've talked about improving your revenues, improving your profit picture, getting the financials there, cleaning up your credit history. How important is it for them to have a business plan at that point about where they're going to take the business?
It's very helpful to a banker to see that plan and what the business is trying to accomplish. And that way, the bank knows and can structure a loan that's going to be appropriate to where the business is trying to go. It doesn't do the business or the bank any good to have a loan in place that doesn't meet the need. And so if a loan of $50,000 were granted, but the borrower really needed $100,000, that really hasn't helped the situation. So that business plan can really help the lender understand the size of the loan that's needed and how that's really going to help the business meet their objectives.
So from my side, when I'm consulting with clients, one of the biggest problems, which is what you're alluding to, is that they underestimate what the need's going to be and become undercapitalized. They don't have the funds there to support the growth, to support Yes. Let's say you're fabulous. You come out of the door and you get 100 customers. Well, you might be only set up to serve 5, and now you have a problem. You've got to very quickly do some things. So making those contingency plans and kind of looking at that as like, okay, if I hit a home run every time, what do I need to ask you for, correct?
Right.
Okay. And then one of the other aspects that I see with the clients is that there's not a real clarity between what's revenue, what's profit, and what's cash. So you look at revenues as sort of a measure of how well they're doing in the marketplace, correct?
Yes.
Profit then is how well they're managing the business.
Yes.
Right? And then cash flow is how well they're converting that cycle of revenue to accounts receivable, to credit card payments, to actual cash in the business.
Right. And that can be one of the biggest issues for a business, is they can be profitable from a profit and loss standpoint, but still be losing cash or be in a negative cash flow position. So the business is still using more cash to keep up with the needs, even though they're profitable. And that's because, as we've talked about, these receivables or other uses of cash that hasn't actually come in yet. And so they've made the sale, but the cash isn't there for them to use. And they go, why aren't I making it? I'm generating all this revenue, but I don't have the cash to pay my
right.
bills.
I'm successful and I'm profitable. And a lot of time it gets down to what we call the cash conversion cycle, right? We're having to pay payroll because we pay everybody as they work. We buy inventory if we're converting products or we're in retail and we're going to sell it. And then we get paid cash, credit cards, or we may extend terms to as a vendor to our customer, depending on the type of business, which let's say is they're going to pay us in 30 days. Well, on the flip side is if we're paying for what we're getting, our employees, you know, within a week or two of them working, maybe monthly at best, and then we're going out and we're ordering inputs, the copy machine, the copy paper, toner, all of those kind of things we need to paying the rent. We're not necessarily getting 30 days terms as a new business, and so we're having to pay cash to get everything. And that's kind of the disconnect that you see with some of the businesses, right?
It is very much, and that's why I think we've seen over the last few years a renewed focus on banks looking at the cash flow of the business. Another term we didn't talk about, but a lot of times here our bankers refer to EBITDA, which is the earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. A lot more big words in there, but generally that's just looking at the profit and loss statement and backing out certain items that are not really cash expenditures for the business. But now there's more of a focus on the true cash flow of the business. So not only looking at the profit and loss, but also looking at the balance sheet, looking at those changes to understand the sources and uses of cash. And that becomes more relevant to seeing how the business can pay back their current obligations as well as any loan that they might receive.
Well, let's talk about some of those elements. So we have earnings, and then when we're borrowing, we have interest to pay. So you look at that, the earnings, to see how much you can support in paying back that interest and the principal, correct?
Yes.
And then we all know the tax man cometh on a regular basis. Every payroll, you pay withholding taxes, you pay income taxes, you pay sales and use taxes. And so the tax man doesn't wait either.
That's correct.
So you're looking again, how much of the earnings is going to go to servicing your loans, your interest on that? How much do you have to owe the IRS or the North Carolina Department of Revenue, whatever states you're operating in? And then depreciation and amortization. We've not yet talked about that on the show. Can we kind of go into that and explain to everyone what depreciation and amortization is and why they should be concerned about having that covered too?
Sure. Well, I won't profess to be an accountant, so excuse me for anybody, all the accountants out there, that if I get any of this wrong. But depreciation is typically as soon as you buy something, you're able to, it's called depreciate it over a certain period of time.
Use it up. Consuming
right.
It.
So it has a useful life. If you buy a computer, you may say it has a useful life of 2 years. And so over that 2 year period, you take that value, and each month it can be what's called a straight line depreciation. You just divide it by 24 months, if it's 2 years, and each month you take an equal amount and write the value down by that amount.
Well, and I'll kind of chip in here too, because with depreciation, what happens is when we buy an asset, a piece of equipment, the majority of the time we buy a computer, and it's all, everything that's included in the monitor, the CPU, the keyboard, everything, the software, all of that comes in. And that's of a value that says, well, it's not an expense item. It means it doesn't go on our profit and loss statement immediately. It comes over on our balance sheet, and it becomes an asset. And how we get it off of our balance sheet is over a period of time, let's say, as John said, straight line, meaning every month you take off the same amount. So over 24 months, let's say we take off $100. We're consuming that asset at the rate that we're generating business using that asset is the general principle there. And so it becomes a non-cash deduction on our profit and loss statement, because we've already spent the money and paid the cash. We just haven't been able to expense all of the money up front. And then I'll take amortization, because you probably don't deal much with amortization when it comes with the
right.
Account.
Don't see that too much.
In my client base, amortization is something we deal with a lot, because that's about intellectual property. It's about goodwill, which goodwill is the value between a purchase price that you actually paid and the assets of that business. And so usually we only see goodwill when a business has been purchased and transferred in value. Other intangible assets are patents, trademarks, service marks, copyrights. Those are assets that have a defined life that contribute to the value of the company and end up being listed on our balance sheet. And we consume those again over the length of, some things are 17 years, some things are so many years plus the life of whoever got the copyright. And so depending on your business, you're going to have assets there that may contribute to a value on your balance sheet that is not readily converted to cash or readily valued for securing a loan. And so that's why banks look at earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And again, we're going to tip our hats to the accountants out there because it's a much more complex issue than what we just summarized it at, but it gives you a feel for that. And so when we're talking as a small business coming in, let's say we've been around 10 years and we hit one of those economy bumps that, you know, everyone went through a few years ago when customers just weren't buying. How do you help us tighten our belt and ride out those downturns in the economy and other impacts that could be out there affecting us?
Right. Every situation is unique, as you might imagine. But some of the tools that a bank has to work with you is they can look at restructuring the terms of the loan. And so you may have been paying $1,000 a month. But with business being down, maybe you can pay $500 a month now. So the banker could work with you to restructure that loan payment so that you only pay $500 for a certain period of time. Another example would be if you have a term loan that we've talked about where it's being paid back over a certain period of time, and so that means you're paying both principal and interest. The bank could give you an interest-only period on the loan to help you through a cash flow crunch. And then when things are looking better, then you get back to your normal payments again.
And so we want to come into our banker at the first moment that we have any inkling that we're going to start struggling to pay that $1,000 a month, because we don't want to not pay and then come ask for help.
That's correct. As soon as you run past due, then it gets very hard for the bank to start to work with you. That's already raising red flags. But being proactive, the bank can get out in front of the problem with you and help you avoid that.
So when we're setting in our businesses and we're talking in these shows about starting a business, can we come into the bank and have you kind of help us understand what the economy is going on in the area even before we've opened a bank account or want to talk to you about a loan?
That'll certainly be part of the conversation that you'd have with your lenders, is that the bank wants to understand the industry that you're in, what you're doing. And so we need to understand that to understand the risks, and we can help provide you some feedback because we may have other customers that have done something similar, and we can provide you some general feedback as to what we're seeing there.
So it's one of the other things when we're pre-planning, which is what we're advocating for everyone right now that might be thinking of starting a business, is to get an assessment, to look at the community, to look at what the banks know, to look at other businesses in our area and see how things are going. Is it a prime time for us to start a business, or do we need to start slower or smaller, or do we just need to step back and wait to plan out a little bit more and look for a more opportune time to start? I tell a lot of my clients there will never be a perfect time to start. And I started my business 11 years ago, post-dot-bomb, post-Enron, post-9/11. And that seemed to be an inopportune time for just about anyone to start a business. But there's always an opportunity in a down market, too. And having that plan and being able to find the customers and realize that your service or your product, your solution may be the thing that people need in that downturn and give them an alternative. So, again, we want to advocate learning about your marketplace, learning about what funds are available in the area. Also, make sure you know a banker and come in early. Tend to look at the smaller local banks, the community banks, because they have more of an advantage in being able to make decisions faster and be a little bit more personal in the relationship with you. You're not just your bank account number or your loan number at a smaller bank, because they really do want to know, from what you're saying, John.
Yes.
So right now, what are you seeing in our area? How's it looking for lending? What are the businesses doing? And if you had someone walking in today, what would you tell them?
Right. Well, it's still a little bit of a mixed economy out there. That's certainly what we're seeing. I think there's more optimism about what's going on. We're seeing a little more increased demand for people coming in looking for loans, but there's still certainly not as much demand as we saw a few years ago. And I think a lot of banks are out there because of that pushing hard to find whatever loans that they can get. So we're actually seeing it being a little more competitive than it was just a couple of years ago.
So what do you mean by competitive between banks? Does that impact the terms and conditions, the interest rate?
Yes, it can mean better terms from the standpoint of longer payback period or lower interest rate for the banks that are trying to win that lending relationship.
So that's like going in where you used to only be able to get a 5-year car loan. It's a 6-year car loan for most people available now,
right.
Those kind of things. So that's what you're talking about, terms are being pushed out. So if you could give 3 tips to anyone that's about to come in and ask for a loan or start a new business, what would they be?
The first tip is to really make sure that you understand your own financial situation.
The personal
situation, yes. That's, I think, what we talked about earlier, one of the biggest things, the mistakes that people make coming in is not really understanding their own personal credit and their own debts and how they can afford to pay back what they have personally. That's, if you come in to apply for the loan and you don't show personally that you can keep up with your obligations, then it's going to be hard for the banker to really trust that you can run your business and keep up with your debts.
Good
point. That's really the first thing. Second would be to as we've talked about, understand your business and your market and why you're coming in for a loan. It's important for the bank to know that you're not just coming in asking for that. Usually that there's a reason for you coming in. And the old adage is somewhat true in that banks are more willing to lend you money when you don't need it. And so that's what we've talked about. Coming in early beforehand is always better than coming in when you're desperate and you really need that loan. And that it makes it much harder for the bank. The riskier the situation, the more unwilling the bank is going to be to lend to you. Then the third piece of advice that I would give would be, let's see, thinking hard here on the third one would be, I think have a good relationship with friends and family, because that may be, as you come in and apply for the loan, maybe the resource that you have to fall back on if for whatever reason the bank turns you down, is that's a resource to either bring other people in to help you qualify for the loan, or as additional source of support for your business to help you get to the point where you could then qualify for the loan. And having those contingency plans in place is really where I'm going with this third reason. It's a contingency. So if you're just relying on the bank loan as the only way to get through, then that's probably not a good situation. But if you thought through, well, we can do plan A, plan B, or plan C and make it, that's going to give your banker a lot more confidence in you as well, that you've thought through everything that you need.
Well, that last one really goes back to what I was talking about on our first show in this series, is that when we sit down to start our business, it's not just us that's impacted by it. It's our spouses, our kids, our parents, our friends, our family. And we may need to rely on them for skill sets, for guarantees, for cash, cash, for those kind of things, and for them to have confidence. And I think also when we know our family's confident in what we're doing, we're a bit more confident in it. So if we can have our family behind us, and I think it also gives us a bit more incentive, because it would be awful to lose your parents' retirement or this kind of thing. So you're a bit more responsible in thinking through and planning things out. And that becomes really important. And John, I want to thank you so much for coming in today and thank Harrington Bank for being part of the community. And I want to kind of give a summary for the things that we're telling everyone. Be aware of your personal credit history and the impact it would have on any borrowing. Start early and often talking with your banker, and make sure you're establishing a relationship even before you open your business. So be aware of where you already have your personal accounts, and if you can put those at the bank where you're going to want to be doing business for your business, then that's important step too. Have a robust business plan. Know from a market sense who your customer is, what you need to pursue it. Be able to pull together cash flow projections. When are you going to need money and how much and how often? And where are those sources of money coming from? Is it out of your pocket, off your credit card, off of a loan or a line of credit from the bank? Are you going to have to ask friends and family for help? Understanding that early and as completely as you can, like John was just saying, have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. Because very rarely in business do we get to use plan A 100% of the time. In fact, I'll say 100% of the time, you never get to use plan A 100% of the time. You want to also identify any collateral that's potentially there to secure loans, and be prepared for everyone that's part of the company. An ownership means to be a personal guarantor for that loan. And again, It's better to communicate early if you're going to have an issue with a line of credit payment or a loan payment than to surprise your banker and not make the monthly payment. And so thanks again to John for joining us today on Focus on Business. And on next Tuesday at noon, we are going to have Leanne McClymont of RadioCentrics helping us understand how to validate your business concept early on. Thank you all for joining us today, and God bless. Don't get